So glad you guys are here. Thank you for coming out. You even had warning on the Instagram post that I would be teaching tonight, so, and you still came. So that's, I appreciate that. That's nice. We've been doing this series over the course of the spring, looking at the I am statements of Jesus. And this one was actually supposed to be about 3 weeks ago when we had the snowstorm-ish thing go on. And so we're actually backtracking a little bit, kind of doing some makeup tonight, coming back to this one, which is, I am the light of the world, Jesus' statement in John 8. So if you've been coming for the last few weeks, we've been looking at these statements where Christ actually tells us who we can understand him as. He's answering our question, who are you? Phil did a great job last week, a phenomenal job overall, but he did a great job really kind of highlighting that aspect of, if we're coming to the Bible, if we're coming to understand and want to know who Christ is, there's no better place to look than the places where he says, this is who I am. I mean, just straightforward. And the reason he gives us these statements is really to help us in some way wrap our head around who he actually is, a part of who he is. Because the reality is, we can't wrap our whole head around who God is. But he says, here, I will tell you a bit about myself through these statements in a way that you can understand so that you can begin to know me and to understand me rightly. You'll never know me totally, but you'll know me rightly. So we're looking at this one in John chapter 8. So let me read the passage to set us up, and then I'll pray for our time as we go. It should be on the screen. Starting in verse 12. Again, Jesus spoke to them, saying, I am the light of the world. Whoever follows me will not walk in darkness, but will have the light of life. So the Pharisees said to him, you are bearing witness about yourself. Your testimony is not true. Jesus answered, even if I do bear witness about myself, my testimony is true. For I know where I came from and where I'm going, but you do not know where I come from or where I'm going. You judge according to the flesh. I judge no one. Yet even if I do judge, my judgment is true. For it is not I alone who judge, but I and the Father who sent me. In your law it is written that the testimony of two people is true. I am the one who bears witness about myself, and the Father who sent me bears witness about me. They said to him, therefore, where is your Father? Jesus answered, you know neither me nor my Father. If you knew me, you would know my Father also. These words he spoke in the treasury as he taught in the temple, but no one arrested him because his hour had not come yet. Let me pray for our time tonight. Father, we just thank you for this chance to look at your word and to look at this statement by you to tell us about yourself, to help us to understand who you truly are and to illuminate to us the truth that lies in your word. We pray that you would speak through your word tonight, that you would use this time to encourage, to challenge, and to uplift. And we ask all of this in your name. Amen. So I'm not even going to ask. This is probably a familiar passage for many of you. You've probably seen it crocheted or knit or seen in different things. And it's never with any context. It's always just this verse. It's, I am the light of the world. Anyone who follows me. If it even goes that far, it says, whoever follows me will not walk in darkness, but will have the light of life. You usually only see that first part. I'm the light of the world. That's a good, catchy, that's a tweetable little thing, you know, that you can send out. That's just real simple. It's inspiring, it's uplifting, it's whatever. I don't know if you've really ever dug into the text around this statement, but it's kind of interesting. Like, it doesn't really totally fit with what's kind of happening there in John. If you look around the before and after, he's having this dialogue with the Pharisees, which were the religious people of the time that thought they knew everything there was to know about God, and yet they were looking God in the face in Jesus, and they couldn't see him, which is the funny thing. But they're having this dialogue, they're going back and forth, it's kind of on and off. And then, pun intended, like a beacon, this statement is there. Jesus just said, it starts, again, Jesus spoke to them, so he'd been having dialogue, and he just comes out with this statement, I am the light of the world. And as you read it, and even I included those next few verses on down to verse 20 to kind of give you some context of the reaction of the Pharisees, but that statement is just bold. It jumps out to you in this passage, and it's there, I think, intentionally. And I think in some ways it even kind of highlights the importance of this statement. Because you can read chapter 7, chapter 8, you can come into this point, and then there's just this verse that just stands out amongst all of it. And this what Christ tells us about himself. Again, I don't know if you've ever read through the text and kind of been in there, but as I've been studying it, I'm just like, this is like a tent pole. Like everything else just kind of almost falls away around this statement of Christ and its importance. And I'll even say there's more that we don't get because of the translation that's lost from us from the original languages, that we don't get some of the contextual stuff. Stuff like, you know, Phil touched on this last week, that's the same in all of the I am statements. That I am that he uses in the Greek, the ego in me, is the Greek translation of the Hebrew word or the name of God that God gave Moses when Moses was like, who shall I say I'm from? And he says, I am who I am, this Yahweh name. As they translate it into the Greek, it's this ego in me. So first off, Christ is saying, I am God. He's using the I am name of God in this statement. Red lights there. We can get that. The second thing is some of the cultural significance around the idea of light that we kind of lose. We read this and we're like, oh yeah, light's good, and we kind of get that. But if you look back in the Old Testament, you look through a lot of the scriptures, you see that light is a theme all throughout the Bible. That there's a contrast between light and dark that's played off of each other, and there's significance tied to that. When he uses this, it's meant for emphasis. The prophet Isaiah, specifically, as he's prophesying and looking ahead to the Messiah that is to come. In Isaiah 9, he says, the people who walked in darkness have seen a great light. Those who dwelt in a land of deep darkness, on them has light shone. There's language like this all throughout there. Another important passage, Isaiah 42, verse 6, he says, I am the Lord. This is him. This is Isaiah's prophecy of God talking about Christ. He says, I am the Lord. I have called you, Jesus, who would be Jesus, in righteousness. I will take you by the hand and keep you. I will give you as a covenant for the people, a light for the nations, to open the eyes that are blind, to bring out the prisoners from the dungeon, from the prison those who sit in darkness. Light was always attached to this who would be the Messiah, this who would be the one to come. This even goes back further into the Levitican law. There's instances in their practices. They kept candles. They kept torches. There was a light that was always burning inside the temple that in some way represented the light that would come, that would endure forever, that would shine upon the nation. And we can go as far back as creation itself, to the very first day of creation when God says, let there be light. And it's interesting. Normally we read that and we see it as he created light, he separated light from darkness, if you look and you read the passage, you see him saying, let there be light, and the light was good. He named the light as good, and then he separated the light from the darkness. So there's significance to this light. I don't know where I got this image, but someone must have used an example somewhere along the way. Anyway, it's been so long that I can't give proper credit. So whoever hears this, if I'm stealing this from you, I'm sorry. But they use an analogy when you think of creation. And like I said, I always have this image in my head now of a master craftsman coming into his shop. And the first thing he does when he comes in before he's about to work on another piece of art is he flips on the light. He can do nothing. The first thing instinctually he does is he turns on the light. He cannot proceed, he cannot do anything else until that room is illuminated and he can see what he's about to set his hand to. I think there's a beauty in that, just in even thinking about the creation story, that God begins by saying, let there be light, let there be radiance, let there be sight of all that's about to happen. That's not totally connected to this. I just think it's cool. I just kind of wanted to share that with you guys. It does kind of connect, but I just love that image of the significance of light and how that's a beginning, that's a start, and that's an enduring thing. And he set that light as over all of creation and all of time. Like I said earlier, when Christ uses these statements, oh, that's possible. When Christ uses these statements, he's meaning to communicate to us something about himself in a way that we can connect with, in a way that we can put our hands on it and understand. So one of the best things we can do with these statements is really to ask, okay, that thing that he's comparing himself to or comparing that thing to himself, let's dissect that. Let's look at that thing. So questions that come to mind are, what does Jesus truly mean when he says that he is the light of the world? And more specifically, what's he communicating to us through the imagery and the properties of light itself? So the first point tonight will be what light can give us. So we need light in order to see. This is coming from the first part of verse 12, where it says, I am the light of the world. We need light. It implies that light is needed. It implies that we cannot function without this thing. Now, something as I've been rolling around in this is oftentimes we believe that we can see things and we understand how the world works and we think we've got a good grasp on things. But what I would offer is a lot of times we can fall under the light of other things that are counterfeit lights, that are things that would mean to instruct us and tell us that something is a certain way, but that light's only going to lead us astray. Things like culture, things like our friends, no matter how well-intentioned they are. I can't tell you the number of times that I've gone on someone's advice and that advice has failed, and I've realized, wow, like I took that as concrete. I walked under the light of that guidance, and look where it led me. That's not to say friends are trying to do those things to you, but we walk under the light of so many different things in our world. We walk under the guidance of so many different things in the world. Even our circumstances can impact us. Even the things that are happening around us, we can form and look and interpret those things in order to say, oh, this is what truth is. This is going bad. I have this awful relationship. I've, you know, got whatever. And so now from those things, those experiences, I'm going to craft the narrative of what truth is based on those things. We can let those counterfeit lights really impact us. All of them promise to steer us in a good direction, but all will ultimately fail us. When I was a kid, my dad worked for our city's water department, and I would go with him sometimes out to the plant site, and on the plant site, they had these big silos where they would store chemicals and different things in the top. Don't worry, we'd never went in when they had chemicals, but he would let us, kind of as a treat because it was really cool, he would let us go inside these silos. And the bottom floor is just, if you've ever been in one, like the storage is only ever at the top. The bottom is just completely empty. It's just a big round tube, metal tube, but it's solid. It's solid steel, solid metal. You walk inside and as soon as you close that door, there is no light. It is pitch black. Yeah, I see fear on some of your faces. Like as a kid, it was really cool. But it was cool for about a minute because immediately, it begins to feel like this is closing in around me. I can speak, I can talk, and I kind of hear my echo, but I have no orientation as to where I am in this room. I could just as soon walk into one of the walls if I just start walking. And what I would find myself doing in that moment is just planting. I would just stand still for fear of what's around me that I can't see. And I would I'll give myself some credit. It would be a minute or so. But I would say, Dad, open the door. And the door wouldn't even have to be fully open. As soon as he would just crack the door, light would flood in. And immediately we'd go running toward that light. Without light, we become disoriented, just like I did when I was a kid. Fear, paranoia, they start to creep in. They start to impact and affect us and who we are. And we begin to allow our emotions to have the better of us. I couldn't tell you the range of emotions that I would go through. And it seemed like each time, one time it would be fear, the next time it would be exhilaration, the next time it would be something else. But that darkness would affect me in visceral ways. And it was something, it obviously burned an image in my mind. Even today, I remember going into those things. And just the reality of being in a place that's completely dark, that you can't see your hand in front of your face, it's jarring. It affects you. And it's something that we can let ourselves succumb to, that darkness. I think I hit the first sub point. We need light to see the truth of what's around us. That's what I've kind of been touching on just there. The second thing that we need light for is to see the truth of ourselves. When the light of Christ shines into our lives, we don't want to see often what's really there, because what that does is pierces straight to the core of who we are. We need it. We know we need it. But we're not really ready, nor do we want to see what it's going to reveal. I kind of have a thing. Almost every time I get to speak, I always work Ephesians 2 in. And so I'm going to do it again. I always do this because I think there's hardly a better picture of the gospel than Ephesians 2, 1 through 10. But Ephesians 2, verses 1 through 3, it says, "And we were dead in our trespasses and sins, in which you once walked, following the course of this world, following the prince of the power of the air, the spirit that is now at work in the sons of disobedience, among whom we all once lived in the passions of our flesh, carrying out the desires of the body and the mind, and were by nature children of wrath, like the rest of mankind." I read that passage because this is what Christ shows us in ourselves. It shows us the reality that we're not just sort of good, that we're not just mostly okay with him, and we've sort of approved. The language that it uses in this passage is that we're not just evil, we're dead. We're completely separated from God by who we are and what we are apart from him. And that only makes sense. That only registers with us in light of Christ. That only registers to us in light of seeing him, seeing his holiness, his perfection, and recognizing that we don't come anywhere close. That's how Christ illuminates. That's how he works in our hearts, and we need to see that. Darkness wants nothing to do with light. Those areas want nothing to do with being exposed, and they certainly don't want to be addressed. They certainly don't want to be dealt with. But that's exactly what Christ intends and wants to do in us. But oftentimes our barrier is the ability to see. John Newton, who's a famous theologian, said, "There are many who stumble in the noonday, not for want of light, but for want of eyes." We don't have the eyes to see. We don't have the ability, the function, to be able to see who we truly are without the light of Christ and without his empowering us to see that. The next main point is we need light to avoid traps and dangers. This is looking at the second part of verse 12. Again, I have all these imageries that come up when looking at this passage, and I've had some time over the last 3 weeks to really roll around with this. So I just picture in your mind, you're in a house, you're in the living room, and all the lights are off, and the floor is covered with toys. We'll even say Legos, to be specific, because they're the worst. Legos, and I don't know if you guys remember Micro Machines, they were pretty bad. Like, they always had a little jagged edge that, ugh. Anyway, normally I was doing that to my dad, but imagine you're in this room, the lights are off, and the floors are covered, and there's only certain places you can step to avoid those things. What are your odds? What are your chances of navigating that without just some illumination? We can't hope to walk this life. We can't hope to endure the things that will come to us in this life without Christ's hope, without his light, without him showing the way for us. We can't hope to do that. But with it, we can clearly see those things that mean to cause us harm. And I would even drill down to say some of the things that are most harmful to us are the lies that can creep in, the lies that the evil one would mean to plant in us at certain times, or that we would even craft in our own minds. Some of you guys know my story, and I've gotten to connect with you a little bit, but I was single, actually, until I was 32, and I met my wife, and we got married. So that means that I was single until I was 32. Do you guys catch that detail? Okay, so some of you feel me. Some of you are like, like, if you haven't heard anything else I've said tonight, you heard that. You're like, I can connect with that. That's real. I can put my hands around that. So you can imagine, I'm human. And there were many times, and there were many seasons, I would even say, that I wrestled with the Lord a lot about his goodness, about who he was, about where he was leading me, about what he was wanting to do in my life, oriented around this reality that I was making really important in my life. And what I would say is, there were times that I would allow those seasons to lay the groundwork for me to begin to believe lies about myself, about God, about girls, about just about everything. But where it started was a discontent with my situation, my circumstance, and as that seeming darkness fell around me, I would begin to let it affect me. I would begin to let it strike fear. I would begin to let it make me question and wonder, what am I even doing? That may resonate with some of you guys. For others, it may just simply be a struggle with seasons of depression. It may be anxiety. It may be pressure from work or family or just other situations around you. But any of those things can form this cloud, can form this barrier that for you seemingly feels like darkness and feels like hopelessness. And darkness in itself can be very blinding. It can be something that seemingly overcomes you and makes you feel as if you can do nothing to overcome it. And that's really the reality, is that we can't overcome that darkness. Not in and of ourselves. We need his help. We need him to help us overcome that. The funny thing, and this will actually connect to the passage that we read, looking at verses 13 to 20, this is kind of what the Pharisees do exactly. They look at Jesus. He says, "I am the light of the world." And they say, "Nope, don't believe you." They go on to say, "You can say those things about yourself, but you need backup. You can't just say this in and of yourself." Jesus says, "It's not just me who says it, it's my Father in heaven who says this. So I'm going on pretty good grounds." And then they later on say, "Well, who is your Father?" And he says, "Exactly. You don't know me or my Father. You are in complete darkness. You do not have eyes to see." Jesus, the creator of the world, is called a liar by his own creation, by the people who he exactly created. He says all of this while even standing in the temple that was built to worship God himself. There's all sorts of irony in this. But this is their reaction to him when he says this statement that should, for them, if they understand who is to come, if they truly know the scriptures, he even says, "In your law it is written." He's alluding to the fact that they should know this. In Christ saying that, "I am the light of the world," they should have fallen on their faces before him and said, "It is he. He is here." Yet they say, "Who is your Father?" They don't even know. They're in complete darkness. That's our state apart from God. We can do nothing to move toward him without his help, without his guidance, without his illumination within us. We can do nothing for that. The last point is we need his light to take the right steps confidently. Looking back at verse 12, the last part of the verse says, I think we maybe have it to cue up. Whoever follows me will not walk in darkness, but will have the light of life. I love this passage in 2 Corinthians. Paul echoes this same idea and clarifies it even more. He says, "In their case, the God of this world has blinded the minds of the unbelievers to keep them from seeing the light of the gospel of the glory of Christ, who is the image of God. For what we proclaim is not ourselves, but Jesus Christ as Lord, with ourselves as your servants for Jesus' sake. For God, who said, 'Let light shine out of darkness,' has shown in our hearts to give the light of the knowledge of the glory of God in the face of Jesus Christ." So coming back to this idea, he is the one that awakens us to himself. He is the one that awakens us to this truth. When we are awakened to the darkness around us and see our need for rescue, Jesus shines radiantly into our brokenness, and as only he can, begins to mend our wounds and guide us out of that darkness. Because the other part of it is too, is we don't come without scars. We don't come without bruises. We don't come without hurts. He says, I want to lead you out of that darkness. I want to call you out, but I want to bind up your wounds. I want to begin to heal you. That light is a healing light for us as well. Only by his true light can we walk this life with confidence and assurance, both for today and our future. Just like I touched on earlier, these counterfeit lights that would hope to lead us in any which way are going to fail us. His is the only one that can steer us where we want to go. It may not always make sense. It may not always be clear, but it is trustworthy and it is true. And we can trust that his mean for us is good. Relying on any other light will only lead us to disappointment, misery, and ultimately destruction. So I want to ask this question, and we'll have the band come up in just a second. But what I want us to do, and I'll kind of preface this, is I want you guys to take a moment when I get done in a second and just kind of think on some stuff. But ask yourself this question. Where do you need the light of Christ to shine into your life? For some here tonight, it may be to simply acknowledge and awaken to the hope and security that comes with being in a relationship with Christ. We have to see our sin as it truly is, confess it to our loving God, and then believe in the work accomplished for us by that same loving God. If you've never done that, if that's never been part of your story, I would suggest that may be where you need his light tonight. For others of us, you may need to simply have his light bring clarity to a cloudy situation, or to bring any light at all, even just a crack, to a season that right now seems hopeless. Maybe it's a relationship. Maybe it's a work environment. Maybe it's just the pressures you put on yourself. There's any number of things, and I could list off a number, and it would probably be true for at least one of you in here tonight. But we need his light to shine into that, to come in. Philip Yancey has a great quote. He says, imperfection is the prerequisite for grace. It is the basis for grace entering in. Light only gets in through the cracks. We are broken. We are imperfect. And if you doubt that for a second, just observe your fellow human. If you don't see it in them, look at yourself. We're imperfect. But the cracks are where the light shines in, and that's where he can penetrate us the most.